You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. We really appreciate you joining us and sticking around with us. If you're joining us via iTunes, we appreciate you subscribing and hope you like what you're about to hear. My name is Drew. Joining me as always is the pickle to my cucumber, my dear friend, Andy.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
There he is. He's back.
Ugh.
Joining us, Andy, as always, our silent partner, Nate. He's making the sound happen. How are you this evening?
I'm doing quite mighty fine.
That's good.
Quite mighty fine.
It's been a big night after a big weekend. I don't know what that means, but I can feel that energy.
I had a good weekend. I camped in my backyard.
Yeah.
Less comfortable than the woods.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Did you do the full, you have like the inflatable mattress, the...
You'd think so. I have that shit, but I was just like, I'm in my backyard. It'll be fine. I'll just sleep in a sleeping bag on the ground.
You thought your outdoor ground would be more comfortable somehow, more home-like than Deep Woods outdoor ground.
Not the case.
No.
It was like almost exactly the cement same. Slab.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up like once an hour to roll over in pain.
Yeah, it's really, whenever I camp and I forget my ground pad or whatever it is, it's really just an hour of a position until it becomes too painful to sleep, and then you just kind of gingerly roll yourself into the next quasi-acceptable one, and then it's another hour.
I was amazed at the kids. I was sleeping in a tent full of children. They were all out cold, like it was great.
Well, it's a novelty for them. I think there is something nice about sleeping outside.
It's those young bones.
You're staying up a little bit later, you're getting that fresh air, and it just takes it out of you, those young bones.
young bones.
Plus, if I know your kids at a party, there was juice flowing hard in the early evening.
Oh, there's a dance party. We had some lemon meringue pie and some s'mores.
Well, that's smart. You gave them a bunch of juice and then danced it out of them.
Lots of glow sticks.
Let them sleep outside like a little kid rave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of raves, Andy, our guest this week was Portland musician John Simon, who goes by, among other names, Montgomery Word, does hip-hop, does sort of electronic music, also the operator, owner, runner, however you want to term it, of You of Now Records here in Portland. So he was our guest tonight. Really great guy. He taught me a lot about music I had no idea existed with such fertility here in the Portland area.
Yeah, some really, really cool music coming off that record label and that scene. So check
yeah, and just we talked about kind of the visual style that influences the music he loves. We talked about some silly stuff, played a little License Plate Detective, and most importantly for me, I just learned a ton about a kind of music I didn't have much exposure to. So hope you find this episode as interesting as I did. And here it is. This is Hot Garbage with John Simon. Thanks for listening.
No. It makes you laugh more.
When I'm smoking it makes other things funnier to me.
Yeah.
When I'm stoned, it makes me less funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean...
It's a double negative.
I don't know if the world could handle me as a sober Andy.
It both lowers the bar and makes me less interesting.
I have become a problem smoker a little bit since I quit drinking. Now I love to not drink and just be high all day long.
And you get really self-righteous about it. Like, oh, I don't drink.
Yeah. And everybody's like, I can't do that. It makes me scared. I'm like, well, here's how you don't be scared anymore. And then I give them like this game plan of how to also have no ambition.
My sister can't smoke weed. If she does, it's like instant, like
meltdown.
She goes to the upside down.
Yeah.
It's not good.
She takes baths with no water.
Yeah. She has to go to bed immediately. And I'm like, well, why don't you just like smoke a little bit
more
instead? Yeah. Smoke way too much once and then smoke a little bit next time.
Yeah.
But she eats weed. And every time she
eats
weed,
that's the opposite
of
me.
Oh no, I've gone too far. It's like, yeah, because you don't smoke weed. You can't just like eat a whole fucking chocolate and
no way.
Go on an airplane.
That's scary stuff.
You're trapped in a tube for 5 hours.
In a tube.
She was flying back to Michigan, and I had all this weed chocolate, and I was like, hey, you guys should take this back to Michigan with you. And she just ate a whole one.
She got hungry on the plane.
She grabbed it from my hand and ate it in front of me. I was like, half of that was for your boyfriend. And he was like, no.
Terrible.
And then she had like a panic attack and almost threw up on the plane.
Yeah, for sure. I would barf everywhere. Got
super sweaty. Couldn't handle sitting in one spot anymore.
Hi.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Now it's really happening. This podcast is already a disaster.
Yeah, I've ruined it.
No, I have a ton of things I want to ask you about. One thing that I'm interested about first, and it's not even really about the music, I'm interested is like your visual arts background.
Visual arts? Oh, because of the tapes?
Just because, yeah, the tapes are always really interesting looking, and there's a lot of different like motifs in a lot of your covers and the artwork that you do. Yeah. Plus your record label, U of Now, has got a really interesting logo. I'm just curious if you have a background as a visual artist and how that kind of comes to bear on your music.
I think that probably the ones that you're talking about have all not been designed by me.
Sure.
But
I like the most.
I know what's good. And so I constantly am asking people for help. And these two covers for Don Jero, one of the new tapes that we just put out, and for Disciple 113, my weird techno name, both of those covers were made by Joshua David Tough Fuzz. And he's on the label too.
Tough Fuzz is another.
He's a magical
show
man.
Favorite. Yeah.
He's been on?
No, but we're big fans of his music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you can get him on here, then you will get a trophy from me.
Nice.
That's a big guy, huh? Yeah.
He's a recluse, but he's a wonderful man. And artistically, he has no training in any way, and he just kills it every time. And we both got into collages around the same time when U of Now started. I've done a number of the covers, but the ones that are sitting here, I did not. This one also, I want to say, Leslie Dorcas, Ghost Tears. She did her own. She's a printmaker, and through actually one of the guests that you had on recently, Heather McLaughlin, Roddy's, both of them work at Flight 64 or have been very involved in that. And I'm going to try to just be as eloquent as I can. Well, you got me too high. Thank you.
Nobody put a gun to your
only
head.
Just
no. Yeah. He said it would make me talk. Anyway, but yeah, there was a tape label out of Portland probably 6 years or so ago, Field Hymns, that had the most magic art. And that was when I was talking initially about U of Now with Tough Fuzz. Me and him were the first people to do anything with it. The art was like our number one thing.
Well,
you can definitely tell. There's definitely an aesthetic that goes along with U of Now, and you see one of their tapes, and you're like, oh, that's a U of Now tape. I need to check that out.
All the three that you've mentioned are beautiful
tapes. Makes me feel good to hear.
Is there, I mean, you said you had that keen eye for what you like and what's good. Is there sort of a motif? Is there something that hangs together in your mind? Is there something that makes it essentially the right kind of art for your projects? Or is it, you know, eclectic and varied?
That's a hard question.
Good. It's supposed to be thought
provoking. With U of Now,
so thank you.
Every single thing since the very beginning was complete trust. Mm. So if I liked the artist visually or their music, then I would say you should do a tape, and then the ball would get rolling, and it's a slow burn. But when it finally happens, they're like, "What do you want to hear the songs and like say yes or no to them like normal labels would?" And I always say, or even just with the art, you know, I just kind of like let people go with whatever direction they want to. And if you're involved with it, it's because I already trusted you enough, because I knew that what you would make would be amazing. And so it sounds pretentious in a way, but I'm not saying, the only reason that my shit's on there is because it's fucking me.
You're like the basketball player who like shoots the three and then turns around before it's even gone in. That's kind of what you're saying.
No. Like I'm saying I'm not including my music as being amazing. Saying that I put my shit out because nobody else will. Just kidding. I don't know. Maybe it might be true.
Well, I think that's why most people start labels.
So yeah, it is how
their own music out there first. Yeah. And then they're like, hey, my friends make some cool stuff, and I like cool stuff.
Yes, that's exactly how
it starts. Those are my favorite
labels. That's probably still where it is because predominantly it's all Portland musicians. But there are some people who don't live here. But
In sort of like the post label world that we live in with all the digital accessibility, what is the advantage to you for having a label or being a part of a label these days?
Every time I meet someone because of tapes, it's always really fun people and humble. There's something very humble about it, that if I was putting out vinyl, I might have forgotten about this part by now. If I was like successful in that sense, you know, that's, I put out tapes because it's cheap. But it is also like a style. The question is, what do I like about meeting other people in that?
Just like, what is the advantage of a label? I mean, I can understand totally like being a part of some, like a group of people that have similar artistic values, mm-hmm. and kind of hang together in that regard. Is there something really important in your mind about being a label specifically? Does that matter to you, or is that...
It was what is like kind of what we just said a second ago, which is that, who's going to put me out? Me.
Right.
And so then the ball got rolling, and like everyone that I realized that all my homies were these super underappreciated people, and that it needed to be physical, even if it was a failure, even if it went nowhere, but just that there'd be a physical medium for this thing that we all do. We all have like normal shit jobs and families or whatever is going on. Or some people have like really great degrees too, I guess, and have great jobs. But just that there would be an outlet for it where it wasn't just the thing that, like, as a musician, you always get these people who are like, oh, it's really great you have a hobby. And then you're in your mind, you're like, go to hell.
Right.
You know, like, so it's not, a little it's bit not what it is. And so, yeah, it's
being part of a label.
Yes, it's very validating as an artist to have a physical thing to touch, and it completes the circuit somehow. It gets it out in a special way. I don't know how to explain it.
Oh, it's just like, I think it totally makes sense. It's like just the fact of someone else, you know, being excited about something you created on your behalf. Mm-hmm. So it's like the idea for me as a amateur musician, the idea that someone independent of me is listening to a song that I am a part of enjoying
that's the wacky part.
Is crazy, but it's also like the most flattering and interesting part about it for me. And I can imagine if someone is part of your label, you're having conversations about them with other people as mm-hmm. to why they should like them. And I feel like that in and of itself has got to be
that's probably a sensational what I suck feeling. At most actually is marketing and all that, like just talking about people and getting it out there. I have like a few avenues that I just do habitually every time something comes out, but then that's why it's a tape label,
right?
Because like I'm not I tried CD Baby and all that crap like once, and I was like, this is demeaning. This is like the part of music that makes us all quit, you know, is just feeling like super underappreciated and just like a big, like a little drop in the bucket in the world of iTunes and shit. Like all the stores that you have to market, you have to pay like $26 and we promise you'll never be seen, you know, or whatever. And then tapes was the exact.
Yeah, really, it's just like throwing that $26,
whatever it is,
into the void.
It's some small fee for just nothing that you get. I never have sold anything on the internet ever in my life, except for through you now. So, yeah, I've tried those things.
Well, I imagine just like having tapes too. I mean, A, tapes are becoming super awesome and people are really getting into the physical tape again. But also just like having a tape to pass off is a cool thing. People are always, whenever I tell them that I have a tape, they're like, oh, a tape, really? That's just instantly they're more engaged in just taking it from me. I mean, they never want to buy it. Yeah. But they definitely want to take it off my hands more than they would with a CD. But let's play some music. I know you brought some tunes.
Sure,
we can
okay
start wherever you
it?
Would like.
Is it okay to do it off the phone? Just
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, or? Yeah. The people at home are going to hear it crystal clear.
Well,
but yeah, what did you bring to share tonight?
The first one's by a homie of mine, Big Sigh, Colin, and this is from an album that he just put out called Big Sigh and Bad Dream Vacuum, and the song is called Buzzed.
My ears start ringing, my head goes numb, but no.
Let's talk about your music. Sure. Where did the Montgomery Word get started? Maybe not where, but how?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have to.
I was coming out of one of my. I've gone through a lot of phases in my life, and I was coming out of like an IDM like breakcore phase, which is really funny.
That's a very specific phase.
Yeah. Doing a lot of electronic music, which I have recently came back to, but then I took like a 5-year break where I hated all music that like that, and I just made like these weird rap beats that.
What was the first wave of your electronic music
days? Gosh.
What era were you talking about?
Well, I had finished, I was in rap groups in Minneapolis for many years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and.
That's a fertile hip hop scene.
Yes, very much. It was very cool. And I still love all those dudes, and a lot of them are still killing it, and it's really cool to see. And now that some of their children are killing it too, and that's fucked up. Anyway,
multi-generations.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So everyone quit basically rapping that I kind of came up with, and they were all dads.
Yeah.
And I don't have kids, so I just kept doing exactly what I was doing, and I still do it now. So I saw the monome, actually. I think, do you know what that instrument is?
No.
Have you ever heard of Daedalus?
Yes. Yeah.
His instrument that you can't tell what it is, it's just button box. Mm-hmm. I saw that through a buddy of mine, Mark Hendrickson, who's a really wonderful visual artist, video artist. He showed it to me, like, he showed me pretty much everything that ever ruled that I got into that was weird instruments. He's just the guy. And he showed me the monome and this program that was written in Maximus P called MLRV, which was for kind of, it was a grid-based system of chopping up samples. And it allowed you to live loop everything that you did, but on time. And so it was like this magic thing, and I just got crazy about it. And
this one instrument and this one program.
Mm-hmm. And the Monom community was actually like kind of a pretty good kickstarter into what you have now became, because it's very underground, people hanging out with each other. It's
like there's a tape person that we've talked about, and there's got to be a Monom person that, again, is very specific.
And any weird small scene is very, very supportive, and it's like nerd bombers all just giving each other hugs and stuff. Do you know what I mean, though? Like, yeah. I mean, if I was collecting 8-track tapes, like, I would have like a whole bunch of friends that, like, we made 8 tracks, and patches or something. Because, like, people, everybody's just, I don't know. Internet love is big, too, about stuff like that.
So when you're talking about the mono scene, how did you found the instrument first, and then did you just get obsessed with it a little bit?
I did.
And that
for
led
a while.
You to these communities of people?
Yes. Well, actually, as electronic music is actually a hard thing to get crowds to like if it's not dance.
Yeah.
So that was always just like a dead art. Like every show was like barely anyone there. And like,
was it like noise electronic?
No.
Or
no, it was called Toilet Tooth, and it's funny, and I hate that I'm talking about this on your show.
Daniel Wall told me all about this and told me to bring it up. This is amazing.
So
Toilet Tooth.
So yeah, that was my name for a while. And then Montgomery Ward came about when Tough Fuzz moved to town. I saw him performing with Edison, I think, at Ella Street Social Club, and I was going to see them for the mono, but ended up meeting this guy and Tough Fuzz and got to talking, and his music is amazing, and he basically just swerved me back into hip-hop because that's what all he cared about.
Yeah.
And then basically it was just like nonstop watching movies constantly, and like something happened in my head where, like, I was once again fishing for samples, which was a thing I did for a very long time as a younger person.
Yeah.
And that
real... It's an endless pursuit, I would imagine.
It's a wonderful world.
The wonderful world of samples.
It really is. Yeah, because it's like you're always consuming all of this stuff.
So okay, I'm
looking.
I mean, we're talking about. I mean, we talked a little bit about, like, visual art that you were kind of drawn to. Then there's this very specific sound and instrument and program that you're drawn to, and these communities of people. Do you feel like it is all of these factors that inform what your music sounds like, or do you like a kind of music first, and it's led you in all these different paths?
I love that you asked that. So basically, people always say, how do you stay inspired and how do you keep making music and all this stuff? And it's what has always been the driving force is being open to loving something or, you know, like in the same way that you search for a sample, you're like always searching for the next artist that you want to just consume.
Oh,
if you're
yeah.
a music lover, you can just consume an album and you like, you kill it. You make it so sometimes you hate it afterwards.
Yeah. I do that pretty much with everything.
Yeah. So yeah. And then you sleep on it for another 3 years and then you go, fuck, this is so good. I haven't heard this in a while.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's great again. You know, Mount Kimby is a band that I did that with. Like I just consume everything. And then Andy Stott, like recently it's been more techno guys, which mm-hmm. is weird and almost embarrassing in this funny way that everybody's gravitating towards that genre again. But
for me, it's the Grateful Dead. I've been listening to a lot of Grateful Dead lately.
Really?
And
Dave Anderson.
What's his name? Russo. Joe Russo, I think is his name. He's in the Benevito Russo duo. He's half of that. He's doing this thing
called The Russo Half?
Almost Dead, where he's playing Dead songs. And it's amazing.
I have never heard any Dead songs, but one of my best friends of all time, when he listens to this part of the show, he's... gonna have a pillow in his lap or something. Nah, he's a magic man.
I just think there's a lot of when you're talking about like trance or like more like house music that's got more of like a feel to it. More of a, they want it to be repetitive. They want it to go a long time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of crossover with the Grateful Dead there, where they were just more creating
long form.
Just these scales. They're just playing scales and just like just letting it go where it goes. Mm-hmm. Kind of in that same way.
Interesting. Well, Andy, you have some music to share with us?
Oh,
I've got plenty more to ask on this subject, but we might as well listen to a little bit of music.
Shit.
Maybe it won't be the Grateful Dead.
Maybe it will.
It won't be. It'll be this amazing hip-hop producer I came across today. He just, it's kind of like hip-hop. It's kind of like lo-fi instrumental hip-hop. His name is Hota Essay. He's on a label out of Hota Essay. Jota.
Looks E-S-E. Like Joda Ease.
Yeah, it looks like Joda Ease. He's on a record label out of Nashville called Day Old Records, and also another one out of Brazil called Troglodyte Donuts, which is a sweet name. He puts out a bunch of cool shit. I highly recommend you check out his mixtape called Super Dank 5, and watch the video that goes along with it. I'd play it, but it's like 20 minutes long, and you kind of need to listen to the whole thing. It's cool. The video is like old Jacques Cousteau footage. It's really cool. This is off a track off of his album, Donnie Back 77, that came out a couple of years ago that I really love.
Rolls right off the tongue. Easy to remember.
Yeah. This song's called One Time for Lily Tomlin. Hold on.
Young killer with a lot of sense. When I do my average, you better behave before I shoot you in your head. Cut your shit up, put it clean in a microwave.
Yes.
Hota Ese also plays bass.
Very dope.
In the band Chrome Ponies on tour all over the country. And that's what he does on the side, and I love it. So check him out, man.
Word.
It's good shit. A lot of 303, 909 kind of thing going on. Did you see that? There's some talk about that being re-released.
What, the 909?
The 909 and the 303 are both coming out through Roland again at a price point of about $400.
Are those the bookends to the
Roland?
Those are like the holy grail of bass synthesis. Like the bass.
Do you think that they'll implement like the D-beam
thing?
What's the D-beam?
The D-beam, the optical like light that's on all the Roland products where you go, you know,
oh.
There's a theory of why they break, and it's if you don't use the D-beam every day.
You have to keep it.
It's not a,
keep in touch with it.
It's
just
a,
one time.
It's a very jealous beam.
You have to turn it off and turn it back on and do it.
I don't know. I think they'll re-release everything eventually.
It all comes
were those,
back, right?
Were those at one point like really hard to come by? Are you a gear collector of this kind of stuff? I've seen you, some internet videos of you having crazy old school synthesizers with all these wires and stuff.
I do have some synths. I like gear, yeah. I mean, I think it's like one of the most inspiring things for music is to get a new instrument, even if it's like something like another keyboard. But
did you
want to use it and then you make a bunch of tracks.
Did you ever get into another instrument like a guitar, piano, or anything like that? Were you ever did
yes.
that ever appeal to you?
I used to like sit around and play like blues scales on trumpet after school with my band instructor and shit.
Well, if
like
that is as traditional as you got, then
what?
If that is as traditional of a instrument as you,
I played trombone, clarinet, guitar, drums, but I was never good at anything.
Kind of a polymath across the spectrum.
Yes.
Yeah.
I pretty much can't play any instruments.
Um,
very well.
Tell me a little bit about the hip hop. I'm really interested in people who used to rap. I'm really fascinated by what makes people do that. How did that get started?
How did it get started? Honestly, probably like DOS effects or something.
Oh,
you know, like just sitting in the back of the car, like Stone, being like, D-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d- graffiti. Actually, graffiti was, I got busted and then I was really involved in graffiti and I needed to put that energy into something. And it was like, I'd already been writing raps for so long. And then I met a whole bunch of really, really cool art kids that like, this was all pre-Anticon too. And then met, eventually we were recording our first 4-track album in the next room to where Deep Puddle Dynamics, Dos One, Y, Dos One, Soul, God, what are all their names? Slug,
I know.
And Alias. Mm-hmm. One of the rappers in my group, Perpetual, lived with Atmosphere Slug before he was famous. Well, he was just getting there, actually. And so all those guys were in the next room as we were making our baby 4-track tape. All these like gods were just hanging out 2 rooms over, and that was really, really difficult, but also like super awestruck and stuff. So I'm probably just deviated like crazy from the question.
No, I mean, the question is really just to stimulate whatever comes out, and I have no particular goal. I am a little bit curious about have talked with a lot of musicians who have like that visual arts background. What is it about, but hip hop in particular seems to breed a certain kind of artist. What do you think? Is there any connection to you between hip hop and art? I mean, more visual art. I know graffiti is a big part of it. Like one of
the elements.
Elements. Is that KRS-One who lays that all out for us?
He's one of the many people who helped.
What is the connection there? Like, what is it about that?
What is the connection to art in hip-hop?
And it's not quite there in rock music. It's just not, doesn't have the same kind of one-to-one hip-hop ratio.
It's like
that
a really weird world, right? I mean, it's like, there is all these elements to it, and it's like, why did they get encapsulated in the term hip-hop? Like, what was it that made each thing stick? And it was each for a very different reason, but they were all kind of carried one common thing, just like thing in common. And I think it was like a lot of younger people with nothing to do and trouble was happening. And hip hop was like this thing that the whole community could say definitely was not someone causing trouble anymore. It was like, people hanging out in the park and like singing together, and like the idea of battling each other so you don't have to fight and kill each other. You battle like whatever you are, you bring it to the wall, you have freestyle battles, whatever. I don't know, it's a big community thing, and that, like in the world that I kind of came up in, you know, I didn't grow up in New York City. I grew up in like small town Minnesota.
Right.
But I still managed to, like, my first 2 records I ever bought were like Beat Street Volume 1 and 2. And somehow all that shit still trickled down to like small town America. And for me, it was just seeing that.
Such gold when you found that kind of stuff. In small magic. Town, you're just like, I had this. No one else here knows what this is. How did it come here?
Yeah. And I suppose the movies are like what brought it to me. Because in a small town, you're very limited to what you can find. But then by the time I was in, you know, 12th grade, I had like hundreds and hundreds of tapes of rap tapes, and just like I was already an encyclopedia. And then when I finally got the chance to actually like meet other rappers, I just wrote hours and hours and hours and filled up books and books and books. And I don't know, something with resonated, like my brain's always been really into patterns and stuff, which is like all over that shit. Like,
I feel like we're painting a very vivid psychological picture of you with all the things we've talked about so far. This is very helpful.
Well, you got me high. I'm sorry.
Garbage.
No, that was not meant to deter you. I'm fascinated.
So there's weird, like, you know, the way the brain works. It you compartmentalize, and like you decide what your unit is and how, what way you, that you measure things that you're around and what you get attracted to and stuff. And some people, it's always patterns they're noticing, and then they become mathy people, which I also am a mathy person. I don't use that degree, but yeah, I'm a very mathy bartender.
that can be good.
I don't use any degrees, which is my mom's favorite subject right now. You know, you could be doing something else.
You're doing a lot of things.
I love her. She's wonderful. I do a lot that doesn't matter in a very special way.
What?
Which actually is a Gandhi quote.
Oh. That's important. That's important for our listeners.
He said exactly that. Like, run a tape label. Don't make it matter.
Well, yeah, that's what he was
Mom's
referring to. That's
mad.
The context for the quote.
It was more of a haiku.
Right.
Sorry.
Do you remember, like, what was the subject matter of your rapping? Like,
oh,
when
God.
You when you feel like,
well,
you're at
I'm
your
still
peak.
Rapping now, actually. Okay. It's a secret. I'm not going to, don't ask me.
Oh, man, that was my next question, is are you still writing and putting
I literally have decided that I got to make more rap songs. And I've been talking to a homie of mine, Dan Kern from Pelican Osman. If you ever listen to any other You Have Now tapes,
yes,
he's actually good. Like been a rapper a long time too, and he's a goof, and I can't imagine that the songs that, but I've made rap songs with Northern Draw, Kip Kruger, in town here. Also check out his music because he's really good, and his new album out on Boom Clack label out of Munich.
Ooh.
He's a homie that networks like a mofo. Anyway, yeah, there's all these kids that keep rap going.
So keep your eye out for that.
But I want to
future rap album.
I want to do more. So I've been writing a bunch, and it's actually kind of like,
so
it's hard to do again. So what is the subject? Is
I know
you
I just restarted it after 3 years, and I wrote my first rap in like 3 years.
Yeah,
2 weeks ago, it was terrible.
Are you still rapping boom bap stuff, or are you kind of doing like the Young Yachty? Little Boat type melodical flow?
You know, I aspire to be wordplay because that's what I used to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that in my old ass age, that's not what comes out. If I want to, I got to let it come out how it comes out, and I can't make it something that I'm not, because mm-hmm. I'll immediately stop and I'll be completely defeated in that. So what is it about? It's fucking super weird cryptic shit, man. Like, and that's probably, you know, it'll be a limited audience for sure. Cause it's like I paint pictures with words in a way that I don't even really know what I'm saying half the time. But I tend to, like, all the songs that we ever wrote, like in Perpetual, were equally that way. We would just get like a black and white photo, and we would just each write a verse that was 20 bars to about this photo. And
that's,
we were like art
that's
kids.
Cool.
Very conceptual.
And we would, yeah, it was conceptual as fuck. And I don't know. It was good. You know, like, we're on a sinking ship. Like, what are you going to say about it? Oh, and also it's called hip hop. Like, yeah, like, you know, like weird, stupid, kitschy shit like that. But no, I love it. It was all good.
Well, it may not be hip hop, but I know you got some other tracks to share. What was number two on the list of songs for this evening?
Number two. This is not local, but it is a beat maker named Lee who from Japan. It's Asano and Rui, I think is how you say it. But the track is called Chill by the River.
Ooh, I'm down.
I love Chilling by River.
I'll dip a toe
in. Something that, as a beat maker, makes me, and a lot of other beat makers, just insane when we hear these guys' tracks. They're probably two young kids that just kill it. They're just so good, and their shit is all magical.
I can do it. I drink. one. He is a great now. Here's high. How's long? Travel to me. I am a great I drink on me. Break up one. Is it? Sun bit.
Every time I hear music like that, I feel like I'm listening to just like, it's like future music to me.
Really?
Like there's a generation of people that grew up on totally different music than I grew up on, and now they're making their own thing.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
I don't recognize all the musical touchstones that went into
driving that kind
of music.
That's like the most modern music you could listen to you.
Yeah, exactly. It's super modern music to me. Which in a good
it is.
Way.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah,
it's like think
hyper now. That's what I would call it. That's the
it's
genre.
Like, it's
name.
What rap beats became. It's like now edge. It's like these nerdy kids sitting in their bedroom studios and side chaining every kick, like on every format that they can find.
Well, and using some weird social media platform that I have never even heard of because I'm over 30.
Right.
It's called like Snapflick.
Yeah.
And it's like it only comes up like 10 minutes ago. You never
it
get
saves
it.
Pictures for exactly 5 seconds. If you don't catch it, then it doesn't
yeah.
exist.
That's it. It's just only 5 seconds.
So you're
seconds.
Not allowed to put your phone down because you might miss something.
See, I have I have limited interest even in the mainstream social media channels. I can't imagine going any deeper into that world than I already am. One thing I've noticed while we're on the subject of that, I don't know how you feel about this as someone who does a lot of posting of or hosting of your own music online in various channels. Why is it that both Bandcamp and SoundCloud look terrible to use? Everything about those is so busy and unappealing to me visually.
You feel like that way about Bandcamp?
I don't feel that way about Bandcamp.
But SoundCloud is becoming something.
It's changing a little bit. Mm-hmm. People are going over to Mixcloud quite a bit more.
Yes.
And that's good. I like Mixcloud.
It's nice that something's there to go to. I'll say that.
I suppose that Bandcamp
Remember how long MySpace had you?
Yeah.
I don't know how old you
MySpace
guys are.
MySpace was the ultimate out of control website where everything looked like shit. There's
SoundCloud
GIFs
was
and
where we
was
went
saying.
After MySpace because yeah. We didn't have anything.
But yeah, MySpace was a shit show. If that is
the, it was the first
if that's the progeny of SoundCloud, that explains why SoundCloud looks like a big old turd whenever I want to go use it.
Well, I
SoundCloud's
like,
weird, yeah.
What I like about SoundCloud is they don't try and make it look like shit. It's just like the album cover and the sound file. That's it. I like that.
I use SoundCloud still. It's a wonderful way to embed stuff.
That does seem
to be preferred
embedding.
They're trying to put a community into it, and well, they're actually what they're trying to do is make money off of it, but through making a community that. But now there's just so many, like you can buy these packages so you get more likes. Like, yeah. But actually, that it just keeps reposting your things on a million like ghost accounts, and it's
so it's really a
it's
robot
all cheating.
Talking to robots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that's how I use SoundCloud. I just scroll through my homepage of shit that I like and download hundreds of trap remixes. And every once in a while, they'll throw in a fucking robot bullshit, and I'll be like, I've seen this one. I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's still there.
But Bandcamp, I don't think is very bad. I mean, they take a little cut out of every sale, but they're fair, I think. Most people feel pretty good about them. They haven't gone to the dark side yet.
For bands out there who are posting things on Bandcamp, please, please, at the bottom of your download page, put bands that you like down there.
Yes.
I fucking click
recommendations
on that shit.
Are magical.
Make it the new
so
the
cool
new liner notes.
Well,
yeah, it's what it
having
is.
User accounts where you can see what people download and making little collections has helped me find a lot of good like music that I never would have heard of.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys find as music, you know, kind of diggers, do you find that you lose some of the sort of like that emotional heft that comes from organically encountering a band or a song by doing the kind of online roulette? Do you feel like there's something lost in the fact that you're consciously seeking it, or is it really just the same experience for you?
Maybe I don't feel bad about it because I'm not constantly seeking it.
Oh, okay. I know Andy.
I'm a little bit detached.
I like you were talking about being like that never-ending search for samples.
Yes.
That's me for music at Bandcamp.
That's good, though. I'm glad that you're doing
sifting
that.
Sifting through Bandcamp and just like searching. I'm down to like now where I'm like searching specific cities.
We need you.
Shit like that.
We need you. See, because that's the new digger, right? I mean, it's like...
Yeah. And it's, I do get that emotional attachment when I do find something that I love, because I listen to all my music digitally anyways. When it's once it's on my iPod, to me that's like, oh, fuck, I got some good shit on here. I'm stoked, yeah.
I'm probably... you know what I do is like I go on like Waffles. I don't know if you know what that is, like what Oink turned into, the torrent music torrent site.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I go through collections on that and what.cd, basically these private like music tracker things that people that like that last band that I played, Lee, I got that off a collection on there. So it's like just nerds posting stuff and
nerds like good shit for the
most
part. Yeah.
And it's rad, and most of the time you can find great stuff. But yeah, Bandcamp is a good way to find stuff too. But
one cool
then
thing
you're
about
just...
Bandcamp is if you just search Portland, you also get Portland, Maine. Portland, Maine's got a fucking freaky weird art scene, and their music, it's very much more like U of Now than like
oh really?
I'll find out like bands on there. Like if there were like a synth division of U of Now, like it was just like weird. Like synth wave.
Oh.
Like, oh man, it's crazy shit.
That sounds awesome.
I've also been doing a lot of reading about other cities and on
you
various livability indexes. And Portland, Maine also has the highest amount of restaurants per capita. So if you're interested in having a good meal.
They're in the top 10 of beer cities, too, rated by some bullshit website.
And I didn't realize, but they're right on the water up there in Maine. So that's a waterfront city.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And it's cold as fuck in the winter.
I'll bet it is. And
you can
full of mosquitoes in the summer.
You can talk to Lindy. She grew up there.
Yeah. But
really?
this
is what makes the show not cool is if you're talking about people that only people on the show
let's
know.
Do some
I was trying to generally
talk.
Inform people about the opportunities that might await them in Portland,
let's
Maine.
Let's talk about shit that opened up in the Woodstock neighborhood recently. Really, really specific.
Yeah, if you don't live in Portland, tune out for the next 47
I
minutes.
Had the
it
best
won't make any sense
roll.
To you. I do want to shift gears.
Going to the Ace Hardware on Woodstock and buying skateboard parts. They have a skate shop in the hardware store. It's dope.
Well, that is
really?
Good. I mean, a lot of our listeners are in Portland, so that will still be relevant.
Mm-hmm. Topical.
Andy, I understand that you have encountered some license plates recently.
I have.
And I think we should try to figure this out.
Yes.
This is a game called License Plate Detective for our listeners and our guest. There are no real rules per se, but Andy will occasionally encounter a vanity plate. It's obviously a vanity plate, but he has no idea what it means. And so he'll read it out loud for us, and we'll try to help him figure out what possibly the owner of that plate was getting at. You down?
Yes.
All right. There are no wrong answers. Andy, what's something that you have come across recently in the plate
world?
Well,
a couple of these are really exciting because I took pictures of the license plates while driving.
You can tell that's good. Yeah. Usually it's jizz related.
Yeah. These ones are very
If it made
exciting.
You endanger the lives of your family by snapping a moving picture.
This one was strange to me. It's just DC space care.
DC care.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care.
Is it don't care?
That would be care. DT. Care?
Yeah.
Doctor care.
Donkey cervix care.
Oh.
Could be. If you want to get real specific.
It's very specific veterinary medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a specific
a license plate.
I'm taking a look at it visually.
It might be a doctor of cesareans.
It maybe is.
Who cares?
Maybe it's the D cares. We are friends with
ride.
A family called the D cares.
Oh.
Or it is something Washington, D.C. healthcare affiliated.
No,
oh,
it's a certain style of caring that only. It's like Minnesota Nice, but it's D.C. caring.
Yeah, D.C. yeah. care.
It's like, I fucking really D.C. care about it. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You know, homies in a bad way, man. We need to reach out.
Yeah. Yeah. So D.C. care is probably like a level up of caring, or is it a level of ambivalence? Like, you know.
Oh, it could be, yeah, ironic.
If I do see that movie in the theater, that's great. But if I don't, I don't D.C.
yeah.
care.
I don't.
You know?
I don't damn cunt care.
There it
well,
is.
Maybe it stands for Washington, D.C., and it's like a patriotic thing. Like, hey, guys, D.C. cares.
Maybe it's don't-cha care, and it's a question.
Don't-cha care?
Yeah. It's really calling everybody out. Like, don't you care? Look at yourself. D.C. care? Yep. It's one of those, certainly. No room for doubt there. What's another one that you saw, Andy?
This one was S-P-E-L-M-N.
S-P-E-L-M-N.
Mm-hmm.
So just Spellman.
I think
S-P.
Is that a wizard?
Spell it again. S-P.
S-P-E-L-M-N.
L-M-N. Was there any space or all one word?
All one word. I think that's a wizard. A Spellman.
A Spellman. Just a classic Spellman. Mm-hmm. Kirk Spellman. The wizard.
Portland's own Spellman. It's a superhero who casts spells.
It would be ironic if he was the spell man in the sense of actually like word spelling, and he had to really contort his own license plate. He spelled his own license
just
plate.
Just yelling, spell him. Like that's somebody's way of dealing with stress is they just spell stuff.
I gotta spell some things.
Spell him! This is unusable. Fodder.
He couldn't get a comma in there like, spell man! But that's what he meant. Yo, spell, man.
Spell.
Maybe
man.
The M and the N was like my name.
Maybe he
and
means
it was
like
a like an angry thing for him. Like spell my name.
Yeah, it's really aggressive. Or he's big into resting.
It's his
he'll sit
personal
a spell.
Blend of what's my name.
Yeah. He's really laid back. He likes a good sit in a rocking chair.
Just like a spell.
I will take a spell, man.
I'll take a spell. Man.
I'm a real laid back spell man. Just a chillin' wizard.
This is
a real chill spell, man.
Wonderful.
Here's one that's just stupid, but this I saw and just like thought I had to tell everyone.
Unlike the other ones.
It was like it
the
was
other ones are
sun,
really.
Sun, please. Just PLZ.
What? Sun, please.
Sun, please.
Just asking
like
for a nice
somebody
day.
Somebody moved here from out of town who was just like, "Fuck, it's winter."
Yeah,
time.
I made a mistake.
No one asked us to move here, but
I
we're going to bitch
and
about
the, only
the
thing
weather.
I care about is credit, and I'm stuck.
Whenever I see that license
sun,
plate, I'll just
sun,
laugh.
Please. Is it all one word, or was there a space?
There's a space.
Maybe. What if it's like Sun Police?
It could have been the Sun Police.
It's like
whoop whoop. That's
it's
the sound
like
of Sun Police.
It's like, oh man, that's just bringing so many things I'm not going to say on this show up in my mind. That's
the
not,
Sun
that's,
Police.
That's the naughty license plate.
That one's very naughty.
But I hate the cops, and so that was where it was coming from.
It wasn't
it was like
yeah.
that. Cops just start shooting at the sun. It's like
those are the kind
they're
of cops that
intimidated
the
by the sun.
and
those are the police that are at a war with.
So in this imaginary world, is the Sun Police the person driving the car, or is the person driving the car just a fan of that kind of cop?
Oh no, that's their utility vehicle.
For the Sun Police.
They're out to kill the sun.
Yeah. Maybe they're undercover and other people, their opponents can't read.
Right. And they can only be identified by their vanity plate. So if they kind of scramble the letters into an actual word, ironically, they won't be able to identify them.
I don't even know what I'm saying, but I like it.
You're Andy, do you have one more to take us home?
I'm going to do 100 more.
To park the car?
Oh, man. Okay.
Make it a good one.
I may have done this one on the show before. Star, space, BD.
Star, BD.
Bad dude? The real question here, we know it's a star. Star whatever. What the fuck
star
does BD stand for? Star bud.
It's
like Air Bud's cousin?
It's like
The astronaut golden retriever, star bud.
It's
Is it
S-T-A-R? Yeah, S-T-A-R, space, BD. You think that's a weed farmer and that's their star strain?
Or
I grow star bud. It's out of this world.
It was growing on the moon.
Or is it a kind of folksy way of talking about being really hungry? Like, I'm starved. Don't pull me over. I'm starved.
No.
Starved. I'm likely to bite your knuckle.
I'm hungry. Something starved.
I'm FN starved. That's my vanity play for being really hungry.
I'm star bud.
What if it's like star bod?
Oh, star bod. I like that.
Look out. There's a star's body in this vehicle.
Yeah. Name a star. It's
hundreds
Polaris.
Of tiny muscles.
Star butt dick.
Butt dick. It's a special kind of dick.
Star bad.
It's star
bad. It's like Sinbad's like mentally handicapped brother.
He's still funnier. Way funnier.
And they gave him that name because to be
I
really
think
inspiring.
That I might have gave away my age on that one. I made a Sinbad joke.
For people who haven't seen me, I've been told that I look like Sinbad. I'm not joking.
You do if he was way better looking.
Drew's the Asian Sinbad.
I've seen him in a movie like in the last few days, which is making this really weird. No.
You saw Jingle All the Way in the last couple days?
He was a guest on the Eric Andre show.
I was watching that show last night. My wife hates it.
Really?
I love it so much.
I love it too. I watched it at my job today.
It's a huge mess, and that's why I love it. I love like those really like chaotic like.
It's because he's always screaming.
Oh yeah.
Like walking up to a lady, like, can you explain this? And just razoring his forehead,
yeah.
Watching her scream, running away.
Oh man! Like, oh my.
Did you see him at the Republican
hair,
National Convention?
Bloody eyes in his head.
Did you see him go to the Republican National Convention?
I did see it. Yes.
That you can see the fear in his eyes as people are hitting him.
Terrifying.
He's going, kish, kish, you know, like, and he's actually like kind of like he's laughing, but you can see fear in his eyes. He's like, if anyone's gonna kill me, it's gonna be fucking these people.
He got on stage
they are
with that
not
dude,
like
and
him.
Was like, I really want you to sleep with my wife.
Yeah,
my hotel key.
Yes,
and the whole crowd was just like that mother.
They're
fucker.
Literally gonna kill him.
We're not happy with him and his antics.
Old star bad Eric Andre.
Man, I didn't get to see him when he came to town recently, but I hear it was amazing.
Bring it back.
Well, I appreciate you guys playing some Less Play Detective. I think we solved a lot of cases and had a lot of fun.
I feel like we know exactly what those people are trying to tell us.
Andy, why don't you take us out of the parking garage with some wonderful music?
Man, I'm going to take you out with just this gentle jam that I heard today. It rocked me to my core. I'm not going to lie. Her name is Emily. She's in this band called Florist. They're originally from the Catskill Mountains.
Oh.
I think upstate New York somewhere. Now they live in Brooklyn.
It's around Patterson.
And they are fantastic.
For you New York heads.
And this song is just really, it just been, it's one of those, you know, I'm a sucker for like female folk music.
Sure.
And this song is called 1914. It's off of her album, 6 Days of Songs, where there was one of those hashtag contests. Where it was just like, hey, bands, make as many songs as you can for 6 days. And she was part of this whole collective of musicians that she was friends with, and they put out a shitload of music. And this song is my favorite one of the whole bunch.
Grab me by my shoulder blades and hang me out to dry. I'm a mess, and I need someone to help me out with that. Eyes just like a skyline, even when they're wet, and the window is foggy, and the window has hesitant. A bed of flowers, stacks of wood, and a note. A farewell letter from 100 years ago. Please remember to feed the cat. Please remember that I'm never coming back. I was born in 1994. I was born in the 70s. I was born in 1823. And you were born right next to me, oh.
A minute 30. That is a song.
It's good.
That's a song you can listen to over and over again.
And just to think that that was just like a song that was just like, I'm going to write a song real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's got kind of a feeling of like a freestyle to me. It's a very stream of consciousness.
Yeah. Definitely a Kimya Dawson feel, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of music projects are on the horizon for you, Jim?
Ooh. I've been working on... the techno stuff lately or whatever. I don't even know. Electronic, using modular synthesizers, getting to know a bunch of modular dudes in town here. And it's pretty exciting.
Modular synthesizers, that's the stuff with all the wires, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just like this bank of plugs.
Just,
and wires.
Yeah, like little addictive modules that you buy that all serve this one function, but together as a whole, an infinite amount of different functions and systems that you can kind of create within systems. And like, just if you're into like electronic music at all, it's just magical what it can do.
So you're just manipulating these inputs and outputs to change tone.
You're doing things that weren't meant to be. Yeah,
and this is like OG electronic music, right? This is like dudes in Germany in 1913, who are like probably operators for the phone company or something. We're like, hey, wait a minute.
Have you guys seen I Dream of Wires, the documentary? Yeah, yes. That's a good one.
Watch that. This is exactly about the birth of electronic music with these dudes with these.
Yes.
You know, these synthesizers cost like $30,000 or something. It's like a wall of, I don't know, man. It's crazy. It was not an easily attainable instrument.
Very collegiate and very, I am studying music theory with these things. I'm in a bunch of dudes in a basement.
Yeah, most of the time, if you want to go play one of these instruments, you went to, like, the university's music department, and they were the only one who had one. They had one of three or something like that.
And now they're all over Portland.
People are building their own. They're making their own pieces.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies here.
Were they overlapping with computer development? Was that, like, what the cross... Like, what is the university's interest in...
Well, they were the size of
old
school computers, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I've seen pictures of these big sound banks from, like, the 40s or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What were people trying to do? What was the science behind electronic music that...
Well, really what I think they were trying to do was make music in a new way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They wanted to make a new instrument that didn't have anything to do with anything that had been used before. Because, really, like, the guitar evolved from, like, a single-string banjo from Africa,
Right.
That's been around forever, and it's been just the same thing. But, like, computers are new, and, like, anything they make, it's like... They're trying to make their own music, basically.
No, that makes perfect sense. That's interesting.
I really don't know why they were doing it.
It's nerds.
It was super nerds that were involved with, like, always musical backgrounds, but then they were also, like, Bob Moog and Don Buchla were geniuses in just tinkering. And I think they were magicians with electronics that had strong... friendships with great musicians that had a very specific want list that they gave to these people, and then they would design it around that and listen. Like Bob Moog especially, he was trying to create instruments for music for working musicians. And so, but then Don Buchla on the West Coast was like, I'm hanging out with people on acid, and like literally that was the difference in the two. And so there's this East and West school mode of thoughts where if you're coming at synthesis from a real meat and potatoes sense, then you're East. And if you're at the forefront of like dreamscapes and shit, then, and you want like people to sit in grass while they listen to your shit, then you're the West Coast, you know? And so that's the fun in modular synthesis, is these worlds are very much alive, and it's always fun to see them disagree with each other.
Well, let me ask you this then, as you embark on this kind of music again, what is the expectation of that audience? Like,
oh my God. Honestly, it was like, for with Montgomery Ward, I was always having a really good time and making rap stuff, but and keeping it in that fun party vibe kind of, but right. In that same sense, it's a prison. And you just can't, you know, like you want to
stop partying.
You want to make a 12-minute ambient song, and that doesn't fit with this kind of stuff at all. And so some people just put out really cool amounts of different types of music. And I guess I just wasn't that guy. So I wanted a new project where it was all just stuff that I didn't care if people liked. I guess not to sound like a bratty fucking musician or something, but you know what I mean? Like where it wasn't the prison, where I could make it really weird and maybe that I would take the chance of nobody liking it at all.
Right.
I just played my first show as Disciple 113 a couple weeks ago for the cassette release party. And I played with one of the guys that got me back into electronic music, Sean Pierce. He's a local dude from Portland. And he is part of a duo called Ass, and it's modular synths and drum machines and stuff like that. And he is a wonderful artist. If you haven't heard any of his stuff, definitely check him out. Motor Collective, he has some tapes on them, I think out of Seattle. Yes. And then I played with Don Jarrow, who is a tape I brought to tonight, to play, And this other artist from New York called Stress, and those guys are all some of the best electronic music I've heard in so long. Another dude from Portland, Bobby Wasabi, you should gotta check him out. Like his electronic stuff is fierce and like cool and weird.
Fierce things.
Yeah, have you guys heard of Human Flesh Body World?
No, I have not.
No,
really, it's a
I
house. Like
I would have heard
about there's a house that just has a bunch of house shows and. It's always such a fun thing when you go there. It's like the backyard looks like if like a Mardi Gras parade just broke down and just left all their shit somewhere. And like when you're there,
that's perfect.
Yeah. It's just a house. I don't know. It's just a house. I'm not going to say where it is because they don't like that.
Yeah.
But they just have the greatest shows there.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, this is just
good to hear that the house scene is still alive in Portland, because I haven't been to a house show in a long
time. The electronic house scene, that's what I'm really fascinated in. That's a whole new world to me.
So
obviously it is finding an audience, though. You know, in spite of the liberating aspect of just doing it for yourself, there is a community of people out there that are consuming it. And
yeah, I guess so.
Like
I mean, it's weird though. I mean, I don't know who they are. I just know what they look like. I've seen them, you know. Like,
right.
I don't understand why they're all. Why? It's a weird scene because it's so a conglomerate, because there's so much different kinds of electronic music, but there's not a lot of venues for playing it.
There's not a lot of electronic friendly venues.
So people get together, and then one guy might be doing something that's like kind of industrial or something, and then another guy's doing like really weird techno, and then next thing you know, like it's a breakbeat guy. And I like that. I don't think if there was like three techno artists, I would be dying probably. I would be like, oh my God, I can't hear this much techno. But yeah, so I like the shows. Dynasty PDX has been doing some stuff too on Killingsworth, and the Church. With an X, the X Church, the ambient electronic Sanctuary Sunday, this lady Coco Madrid, a wonderful, beautiful human being she is, keeps ambient music alive through that venue called the Church. The X Church, we call it, I guess. I usually see it in print and don't say it out loud, but yeah.
It's like a license plate that you can't quite decipher.
That's a wonderful place.
No, it's interesting. This is something that I feel like, I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of different kinds of musicians on, but this is an area of Portland in particular that I know nothing about. So I think it's important to let people know that this is happening out there. With that in mind, what was something else that you wanted to share musically tonight?
Don Jarrow just released the cassette on You Have Now called Weirding, and this is the first track off that tape. And he is this dude that builds synthesizer modules for a living, and he's a great dude. And he also is a drummer, and he's been in a lot of punk bands and stuff like that. And he's a very, very good drummer. And since he knew so much about synthesizers, he actually had sensors that he built onto each drum that sequences his modular synth on his side.
Oh,
and
man.
It sounds like, it sounds like, as somebody who's been into like punk and stuff for a long time, if you ever heard of that band, The Boredoms, a Japanese like noise kind of punk weird thing, he reminds me a lot of that, but like in a current style. It's fucking super good.
Oh man, I can't wait to be blown away by this.
Yeah, it's dirty.
Thank you.
Well, John Simon, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Yes.
Really appreciate you coming and blowing my mind musically.
Oh, no.
I needed the education, and I really appreciate it. You got a lot of projects in the works. Obviously, the Montgomery Ward stuff is still alive and well.
Yep.
There's some new... We can look forward to some rap in the near future, some techno. You of Now Recordings is going strong. What is the best way for people to get information about the stuff that you're doing? How can people follow you, find you, listen to you?
John Simon on Facebook, or Montgomery Ward. But if you want to just hear the music, then you of Now Recordings .bandcamp.com is really it. EWE. Like a sheep.
Like the sheep.
Like a sheep, like a two-headed sheep.
That's awesome. I suggest anyone who's listening to this episode definitely check out all your stuff, especially if you're like me and didn't know very much about this world. So I think it's well worth your time.
Thank you.
And,
thank you.
And I think it will really expand.
Check out Pelican Osman. Check out Tough Fuzz.
Pelican Osman's dropping a new album this week. I get to hear The Master, which is
awesome. Dude
is a prolific artist. Hopefully a new Bryzen in the mix if you're into like the rap beat type stuff. Yeah, and a Montgomery Ward is probably about 2 months away.
Yeah.
Hot stuff. Well, thank you again, John.
Thank
you. And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We really, really appreciate you checking us out. If you like what you heard, be sure to tell a friend. Even one would be a huge thrill for Andy, Nate, and I
would be really thrilled.
Personally. It would make my day. Just as it's made my day that you joined us this evening. You can continue to do so by subscribing to the show on iTunes. We'll give you a new episode every Thursday or thereabouts.
At some point.
Yeah, between dawn and dusk on Thursday is our meager promise.
Around noon.
We'd also love to hear from you personally. You can write into the show at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE garbagepodcast@gmail. And Andy, I think it's time for you to jam us on out.
I'm going to jam us on.
What's our closing number this evening?
Oh, man. This fantastic Portland band called Star Club. They recently put out an album. It's just a demo. Check it out. It's not quite an album, but it's a fantastic bunch of songs. This song's called Dead in My Dreams.
For John Simon, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Philadelphia.